Denise, would you like to make an announcement now?
Good morning, WCB. I just have a quick announcement before we get started with the program. If you have not contacted me about your in memoriams, people who've passed away in the past year, could you please see me before the afternoon session starts, because I need to get that information, and we don't want to leave anybody out. Do we have any mic runner?
Cindy, where are you?
You want me to run?
Yeah, there's another one there.
Okay. Thanks.
Two?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to take it?
Run?
Either way.
Yeah. Okay, we're running.
Running? Cindy needs a microphone.
Pardon me?
Cindy needs a microphone. Where are you at, Cindy?
Okay, I'll bring her one.
Thank you, Bruce. Do we have ACB on yet?
Coming.
Almost.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay, so you're still here. That's a good thing. Are you having a good time? Isn't the staff wonderful here? They are. They're phenomenal. A few housekeeping things. Tonight, Lisa, George, are you in the room? Okay. So I've made the executive decision, Lisa. Okay. So instead of us moving the raffle items into the summit pre-banquet, we're going to keep it in the Queen Anne room. We want people to be able to come and see this stuff, but we don't want to have to move it all into the summit ballroom and then have somebody have to watch all of it instead of eat. So this way we can lock it up after the raffle's over. So if you've not bought your, first of all, how many of you clap your hands if you've bought at least one raffle ticket? Okay. Good. Thank you. How many of you, and be honest, have yet to purchase a raffle ticket from upstairs? Okay. So let me tell you, if you've not been up there to check out the stuff, it's some good stuff up there, you guys. There's a beautiful quilt that showcases all of our leadership seminars over the years. It's tactile and it's beautiful, and includes some other handmade things. There's technology. There's low vision sets. There's a Seahawks package. There's dog package. There's a package that includes hotel stay and a $100 gift certificate for next year's convention, along with some other items. There's a jewelry package. There's a phone that's got the large buttons and large display. That's a $230 value. So some money and credit cards and Amazon and Echo Dot, and anyway, there's all kinds of stuff. Tickets are $5 each. You choose which item you want to be in the chance for. So very, very easy to participate. So be up there between 6 and 7. Because, Lisa, I'm going to ask you this. Do you want to open up any earlier than that, or do you want to go for 6? Do you want to open up any earlier than 6, or are you good at 6? So, 5:30. Sounds good. Yes. Okay. So at 5:30, I know we also have the scholarship reception going on, but if you want to be able to mosey through and check out all of the items, we'll make sure there's help up there. Queen Anne is to the left when you get off the elevators, and then once you're done in there, you can go into the banquet in the summit ballroom, which is to the right of the elevators. I couldn't hear you. The tickets are sold in Queen Anne. Is that what you're asking? They're sold in Queen Anne where the raffle items are. Because once you get your ticket, you choose which box to put your ticket in. So you need to be present in the area where they are to drop your ticket into the box. There are 10 raffle boxes for the 10 packages. Any other questions about the raffle? All right, so we're starting a little earlier, 5:30, so that's important. Make sure that you are wearing your name tag for today's business meeting and that it has your green dot in the upper right-hand corner if you're looking at it or if you're feeling it while it's wearing. You're wearing it, it's to the left-hand side on top. So it's a green dot. It shows you can vote. If you are missing that dot, the time to go talk to registration and find out what's up is between now and noon today, because that's when registration's open. You have to be in here for door prizes, as you know, and I think that that's if you're taking the shuttle to the airport, you'll want to talk to, I don't know how that works, but you'll want to just check with the front desk to see if you need to reserve or if it's just, you know, come down at a certain time. So I'll leave that to your discretion. We will have volunteers here in the morning helping people through the lobby and such. Any other questions for me? Remember to pick up after your dog. Blah, 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 right? Any other questions? All right, buy tickets. This is our fundraiser. We still have about 240 to sell. So we've only sold half of the tickets. And I really, really want that quilt, but I really, really want there to be a competition for it. It is beautiful. Okay? Thanks, everybody. Have fun.
Thank you, Cindy. Do we have ACB Radio on?
Yes.
Good morning, ACB Radio. One more time. Good morning, ACB Radio. It's a good God Saturday morning. Thank you for listening. I'd like to introduce Tony Stevens, the Director of Advocacy and Government Affairs from ACB.
All right. Good morning again, everybody. I say again for those that were here yesterday. You're going to be sick of hearing from me the next, but tonight, I'm sure. But no, thanks again for the opportunity. This morning, we're going to be starting off the morning general session by focusing a little bit about the other Washington for a minute. Forgive us because we're all narcissistic in Washington, D.C. And so we'll be talking about the other, the much smaller but a little bit more ornery at times, Washington. So in that sense, I wanted to say thanks again for the opportunity to come to the convention. I had a chance to connect with some folks last evening as well, and just throughout my time here, and have had very much a pleasurable experience, and it's nice to get away from, I heard it was miserably raining, and so I always thought it just rained here, and the weather was so nice yesterday. But it's raining back at the other Washington. So, but to that end, we'll be sharing a little bit about this morning what's going on with the American Council of the Blind on the national front, with the national office, sharing a little bit about some things that you all have been directly related to in assisting us with advocacy and giving you some updates on that, and also give you a little bit of a lay of the land as to how the coming months might unfold, but all's fair to say that I no longer keep a crystal ball. All of us in Washington that try to do any kind of prediction, it's a unique place now. So we've all broken our crystal balls and scratching our heads trying to figure out what's going to go on with the election in a couple of days, because it is a neck to neck, in a sense, race again. And it's always interesting, in a sense, how we get into that situation where everything is so close. And I wanted to start off talking this morning before diving into sort of the things taking place on an issue-wise and address one very, very, very important issue. And that is on the voting front. So who's here is registered to vote? That is nice. I'm hearing a lot of applause. And my hope is, you know, for an ACB member making a marmalade sandwich for lunch now on the East Coast, they too are applauding. Feel free. We'll pause and, you know, everyone listening applause. If you too are registered. You know, there are ways still to be able to vote with affidavits and things like that if you miss the deadline and you get down to the polls and they say you don't exist. There are ways, but it requires some due diligence. But to that end, we know that there have, you know, across the country, always we're trying to monitor and keep track of accessibility issues as they come up. We know that there are some challenges and the world is not 100% accessible. We are fortunate though that it is much more accessible than it was, let's say 10 years ago for the voting landscape. So I start this off with a plea. And I give an example of Virginia, the neighbor state to the Washington, to the District of Columbia. The other year when there was a gubernatorial and House delegate election, it came down to one vote in the entire state over the control of the House, or what their version is of the House, like their Virginia Assembly in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I shouldn't say state, they're real picky about knowing, letting everyone know they're a Commonwealth. But to that end, there was a tie. So they came down to one vote to finally get one sort of seat of a small district up, and it was a tie. And that tie was literally broken by pulling a name out of the hat. Republicans or Democrat, who was going to be in control? So there is often a misconception that my vote doesn't matter. And I just turned to Virginia for a moment out east to say, you know what, nowadays, the way that the numbers are falling, every vote does matter. So, my hope is, who's committed to voting this Tuesday? That's almost a little bit as loud as how many people registered. So, let's try it one more time. Who's gonna get out and vote? Who's already voted? Alright. So, again, I thank you and I remind you that it's not just about voting for the big races, right? It's not just about senators and members of Congress. But it's about all the referendums, all the little things, all the city court judges, the probate judges, the people that determine, you know, who get children in the hands of custody, all of these different people that oftentimes you scratch your head when there's four people and you're like, I don't know any of them. So this person came to my door. So to that end, stay informed and find out if you haven't voted yet already, who are the candidates? Because those are the votes that really make a difference, that impact us directly. Right? So that's kind of the down home, you know, rally to get folks out to vote. Now, what are we doing on the big front? Why, on the national level, what are some things worth keeping on our radar as we're going into the elections? And honestly, there is, you know, down to the wire in a lot of races around the country, there's so much conversation about what they call the lame duck session, which always is a misnomer. They call it a lame duck session because the idea that things don't really get done after major elections when there's the end of a Congress, and Congress runs every 2 years, and then they change into a new session. So we are right now in the 115th Congress, right? So it's 230 years ago that Congress started their gig. And so we're in 115th, we're about to go into the 116th. So, you know, they often call it a lame duck, but actually a lot of stuff does move. And I'll talk a little bit about some things that could move that could be positive for us over the next few weeks. But in the main sense, you know, there are a number of policy issues that are going to wait to be, the tone is going to really determine how things will move come this Tuesday. If the Republicans continue to keep the House, there will be a sense of wanting to try to, you know, focus on the next year and not a need to try to push everything through in the last 6-7 weeks of Congress. If the Democrats win the House, there's going to be a lot of things that the Republicans in the House are going to be trying to push through before January 1st when the new Congress will begin. So to that end, what are some of the things that are the issues that really matter to us as people who are blind, right? Well, I come bearing some good news, not so much about what we're looking forward to, but I wanted to share a couple of things. And I mentioned yesterday about the Passenger Bill of Rights that passed in the budget in October 1st, for the October 1st budget. That was exciting news. For those that weren't here yesterday, the FAA reauthorization, the Federal Aviation Administration, had something in there that said passengers deserve, especially those with disabilities, to have dignity. All right? So, hooray for that. Other things, and this is something that I have to thank everybody here that helped advocate for. It was an issue that we've taken up to the Hill many years. But the Marrakesh Treaty from the World Intellectual Property Organization was signed into law by the President a couple of weeks ago. That treaty, my understanding, has been sent to Geneva, where it will be deposited at the World Intellectual Property Organization. And we were, I think, 42 or 43 countries, nations, including the EU. There's more countries when you break down the EU as sovereign nations themselves that have signed off on Marrakesh. So, if you desire to want to take the train up to Vancouver to the north and start demanding books in Braille, please, by all means, go right ahead, from American publishers. But the reality is this is something that we're beginning to work with. And folks know Kim Charlson, our president, is a librarian by love and by passion in her day job at Perkins, where she heads the library up at the Perkins School in Boston. But in a sense, we are very excited about this taking place globally, because the United States is one of the leading publishing entities. You know, there's so many publishers in the United States. And that's going to help people all around the world in the book famine. So we're very excited about that. We also had an excitement a few months ago, not necessarily in Congress, but with the federal government around the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service, what's called CMS. Does anybody have diabetes in the room? So one of the major issues we've been dealing with is the inaccessibility of devices. The continuous glucometers, the CGMs, I got it wrong in the podcast the other day. Anybody listening to the podcast, please don't hate me. The acronym, I was tripping over my tongue. But CGMs, as they're called, is, you know, a really positive way for folks to be able to monitor their condition with diabetes as they're going through the day. And a company called Dexcom had an app, and the app was the accessible means by which you could monitor your diabetes. And one of the few accessible ways, because the overwhelming majority of devices are inaccessible, and those that are sort of, you know, somewhat accessible are not ideal. So the problem was Medicare was saying, if you have an iPhone and you're using the app, we are not going to pay for this device. Stop. Period. End of sentence. Medicare refused to pay for it, as much as a positive opportunity for reasonable accommodation as it was. Thanks to blind advocates and to families, because families that can monitor their children with type 1 diabetes, CMS pulled back on that decision. So I bring this up because I want to mention that we are beginning to focus more and more on durable medical goods, not just in the diabetic space, but if anybody here has other concerns or issues with inaccessibility of products on a health that deal with your day-to-day health monitoring or access to your health information, we want to know. Advocacy, and you'll hear me say this several times, advocacy at acb.org, acb.org is our email. Let us know, because this is an area that we're actively following and trailing and trying to get more information on. So we were positive about the Dexcom, but there still needs to be a lot of work around accessible medical devices. Now, this might be an issue that you hear in the 116th Congress. I think it's a worthy issue for us to focus on. We don't yet have our slate of issues for the mid-year conference coming up at the end of February. But, you know, I think it's fair to say that Medicare is going to be on our radar. Another area that we've been focusing on in Medicare is access to low vision devices, which Medicare does not pay for as well. They'll pay for a $12,000 wheelchair, but not a magnifier glass to help someone read their pill bottles or their bills or just be able to stay in the house. So this is an issue we face as well. And we have a bill introduced in the House, and we are very, very close to having that introduced in the Senate. My hope is once we get past the election, we can get that introduced during this, I don't want to call it a lame duck, but that's what people call it. But during the remaining weeks of Congress, we are very targeted and focused to getting this bill passed and attached to other pieces of legislation. Because we know after the election, there's going to be a lot of things moving, which gives us a lot of opportunity. Another area for opportunity that we've been working an awful lot on, I've been flying to San Francisco for this and working a lot with the auto industry, based out of Detroit, but they've been in D.C. a lot, we've been engaged, is the world of autonomous vehicles. ACB has been extremely fortunate to be at the table, really leading the way in trying to say how technology that uses artificial intelligence is going to be transformative. The way that we move around independently in our communities is going to change over the next 20 years. There's no question about that. There's even folks researching in MIT the same technology, building in the same technologies in autonomous vehicles into autonomous wheelchairs, right? So how can we be able to navigate our community as we get older, need to rely on certain aids, and oftentimes find ourselves needing to rely on humans? ACB has been very much actively involved in the artificial intelligence front in the AI space. We've been working a lot with scholars and researchers across this field and really targeting in on autonomous vehicles, because we know that will transform the ways that we live as people who are blind in this country, where we are faced with fixed transit being more and more expensive to have houses around. Who lives in Seattle in here? Right? Folks know how expensive it is. If you want to live near the link or near a good, fast bus route, it's not cheap, is it? And this is a problem that is growing more and more around the country. As more and more sort of millennials want to stay in big cities, that drives up the price. So we are very much focused on that. And there is a bill, an autonomous vehicle bill that in the Senate that we're hoping, we've been doing a lot of significant advocacy along with the auto industry, because the other side of the equation too is pedestrian safety. Over 6,000 people, or roughly about 6,000 people a year die due to car accidents as pedestrians, cars hitting them. I myself have been hit 3 times. My wife jokes it's bad karma on her part. I have. But to that end, it's a reality, right, that we all have to face, that fear of crossing the street safely. Autonomous vehicles, are much more safer than a distracted driver. Even though you might hear things of accidents that happen every now and then, by and large, the technology is much more advanced. And so we've been fortunate to be working with Uber, working with General Motors, a new system that goes online next year in San Francisco called Cruise, which is an Uber of autonomous vehicles, to make sure the apps are accessible, but also that our streets are safer. So that's an exciting area we've been working on as well with ACB. And I encourage folks, if you're interested in this kind of technology stuff, again, email advocacy@acb.org and let us know so we can keep you in touch. We try to do some user testing. We had some folks go down. I think Mr. Bishop, and I'm trying to think, Jeff Tom, who's also on our board, went down for some user testing. A lot of this technology is still sort of hush-hush, can't talk about stuff. But ACB is actively there making sure it's accessible, so we are not left on the wayside. So we're excited about that technology. We continue to push in the World Wide Web space as well. The Department of Justice issued a memorandum stating that they consider the World Wide Web not to be a wild, wild west, but to be held under the rules of the Americans with Disabilities Act under Title II and Title III. This was after much pushing and pressure. It was at the request of Congress, because the Credit Union Association for the small credit union banks has been pushing Congress to try to get DOJ to write guidelines. And the DOJ said, you know what, we're not going to write guidelines, which we were happy to hear, because we know when industry is pushing for guidelines written and someone acquiesces and says, okay, we'll do it, does it often put us at the front of the row? No, it doesn't. So we were fortunate to have that win with the Department of Justice, and you'll see us continue to push in Congress toward finding opportunities to make the web more accessible. There is a piece of legislation that Tammy Duckworth introduced from Illinois, and I think it'll be another piece of legislation we hope introduced next year, that's a tax credit for building in ADA accessibility. And that would include worldwide websites. So web, developers could get tax credit, companies using their websites to make them accessible, could essentially get a tax credit, the same way that you can get a tax credit if you're putting it in a wheelchair ramp or something like that into your space. So these are positive incentives, we think, amongst a more and more hot climate of saying that ADA lawsuits are just about ambulance chasers that want to get rich. I think anybody that's ever dealt with a real 8 lawsuit knows you don't necessarily get rich off the ADA, right? So in that sense, we're very fortunate for that in the Department of Justice. Here's where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, and we might not have autonomous vehicles to shuttle us where we need to go on this next issue. But this is very important, and I'm going to be breaking it down for everybody here. And my hopes is that this is going to drive the conversation into the 116th Congress into next year, and that's going to be around fiscal responsibility and our fiscal spending. And the situation that we're going to have in that revenues, simple money coming in, is not going to match money coming out over the next couple of years. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 made significant changes to the tax code, and that is changing the amount of money that's going to come in with next year's tax receipts and the years after that for about 10 years. That means some serious choices are going to be made. We made them a few years ago when we underwent sequestration, which was an 11% hatchet across the federal government. But now we're going to be faced with more and more realities. And there's more and more issues we find that are important that need to be focused, such as the Older Individuals with Blindness Program. This money is getting squeezed and squeezed more and more as rehab is going through its focus on youth and pre-employment transition services, where money's being shifted around, making it harder and harder for adults, which is the majority of who we are, as people who are blind going, losing our sight, right? In our 50s, 60s, 70s, getting the services. We need to be independent. So we need to start focusing on the issues that are most important to us, and we need to start preparing ourselves. We need to start, as if it's going to be a long, heavy winter, we need to go start finding the fuel that we're going to need to get through a winter of fiscal austerity. And it's a conversation, unfortunately, that's not being had enough too much. D.C. over the past few years, and it's not just the past 18 months, But, you know, over the past 8-9 years, the way that the media is so fractured and so in search of what's salacious in a sense, is not so, you know, they're focused on something new every day, not necessarily in the long term. So we as advocates need to start preparing ourselves. Now, what does that mean for us as advocates? It means we need to start talking about the value of these programs in a way that translates to people that are not blind themselves or not visually impaired. Chances are good they might have a grandmother or a grandfather, someone who's aging, and they want them to age in place. Chances are good they might know someone with diabetes that's at risk of losing their sight from diabetic retinopathy or glaucoma. But the reality is that the majority of country doesn't know what it's like to walk in our shoes. So we need to start telling our stories. And I saw today that there's a Rooted in Rights opportunity to talk about video advocacy. I can't express enough the positive benefits that come. We've started doing Facebook Live videos at ACB. We've started a podcast at ACB, the ACB Advocacy Update. You can get it on iTunes or you can listen to it on ACB Radio. Subscribe to us and be sure to leave positive comments. I'm very sensitive and take negative comments really horribly. So be kind, please. But to that end, we need to start finding ways to tell our stories now to get ahead of the curve. We need to start building relationships with people if they're with Senator Murray's staff. As I mentioned, she's a great disability rights advocate, or your local mayor, like the mayor that was here yesterday, Mayor Aaron. So if it's all the way down the line with these people we need to build relationships with, we need to start making those relationships now, because the time's going to come when there's going to be an urgency over the next few years. And I don't want to be Chicken Little and say the sky's falling, but it's just simple math. It's like a weather report with the storms across the Atlantic, and you can tell it's going to be a big one, or in this case, across the Pacific, I guess. But the world's round. So to that end, stay tuned for that, because that's going to be a driving thing, and we're going to be finding ways to tell those stories in advance of the mid-year conference and to get those stories out there. So we're looking for your stories, right? If you're low vision and you need certain aids, right? If you're diabetic, if you need certain medical health devices, things like that, all these things, we need to start collecting those stories now. And tonight, during the keynote tonight, I'm going to talk specifically about storytelling as the theme tonight. But today I want to tie it to the policy and say we need your help. We need solid advocates. This was a tough year for you all, I know. One of the most fortunate parts of my job is working for folks around from state to state, and Washington State is not just contributing to the Northwest, but Marlena and Sue, as we saw with the thing yesterday, and I was so lucky to work with them. Sue was on the monthly advocacy update calls, setting the tone at the national level. Marlena was so active with resolutions committee, she would show up even when pulling her oxygen tank, you know, when last time she was able to get to a convention a couple years ago. We need some new advocates. We have the room here of outstanding, amazing advocates. Everybody in here has their passion. But who's outside of this room that's not here today? Where are the advocates that do not know yet they have a power to have a voice? Those are the people we need to start reaching out so that they can help amplify our voice for the issues we need. You all did outstanding work with the service animal. What was it, 2821? 2822? I'm sure 2821 was probably something about, you know, like toilet paper dispensers or something like that. But congrats on 2822, because that's exactly the kind of things we need to have on a national level, right? The work that you all are doing and advocating here needs to get amplified to a national level. You all have shown the country that Washington State can have a seat, right? You already have 2 seats on the ACB board, which is fabulous, right? And we are so fortunate to have the bandwidth that is given from the state and past board members like Burl as well, and the work that you all have done, Deb Lewis and others that are advocates, you know, we are so thankful for that. But listen to the Rooted in Rights talk, listen to the other panels and talks today, and think to yourself the simple thing, how can I tell that story? Because we need your story told nationally in Washington, D.C., as well as it's told here locally. So I don't know if we have time for questions, do we, Denise? We have time for a couple of questions, if anybody has any questions. But
yeah, Frank Huda.
For the most part, as we're getting the microphone, you know, thank you for your advocacy, because we can't do it without you in Washington. And we continue to need your help. So I say on behalf of Kim Charlson and Eric Bridges, thank you so much for everything you do. All right, Frank, go ahead.
Okay, accessible medical devices, CPAP machines.
Mm-hmm.
You can go out and look at your data. But a sighted person can look at the screen and see if they have leaks, see if they're having apneas. Is there anything being done?
Thank you. Yeah, and that is, that issue, again, we are looking for that kind of information on things that need to get tackled. So I'll add that to my list. And then if we can touch base afterwards maybe, or you know, once I get back to Washington.
Mr. How many people in this room use one? Clap if you use a CPAP.
Yeah? There's that many people using them in here and they are inaccessible?
Yes.
That's outrageous in a sense. That's unexcusable. So, and let the record know on ACB radio that it was not one or two claps. There were a number of claps stereophonically up here.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Hi, this is Melissa Hudson with United Blind of Seattle.
Hi, Melissa.
It's very good to have you here, and it's a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for all the work you do for ACB. But my question is, do you have any updates on upcoming national ACB conventions besides Rochester? Thank you.
So we are only planning out 2 years in the future right now. We have not chosen for 2021 yet, but do you mean the location?
Yes.
So 2020 will be in suburban Chicago, so it'll be on the edge of Chicagoland. So not a bad flight out of Seattle. So it's in Schaumburg, Illinois, is the community near O'Hare Airport. So Schaumburg, I think. Is that from a Wayne and Garth? What was that movie?
Yeah.
Wayne's World? I think they were near Schaumburg or somewhere like that. Aurora, thank you. It's not far. Schaumburg's not far from Aurora. Thank you.
Coming, Colin. Coming.
My pleasure.
Here you go.
One more question.
This is Colin with United Blind of Spokane here. One of the questions I have for you is, when you guys set up the, when you guys talk about as far as, you know, advocacy goes is concerned, and as far as like out in the Washington community, have you guys ever tried discovering, trying to put like, you know, audio systems at every subway stop for passengers, know not to cross the track, so that they don't fall down? Because I've heard about that one when you guys went to the national convention last summer.
So, yeah, with the light rail systems, the link in this city, I imagine, because it is surface level and in crossings and things like that. So we have our environmental access committee that is focused on those kind of issues. There are, like, guidelines, and it's real hard to turn guidelines sometimes into statutes and laws. But, again, those are stories. If you've got an iPhone with a video camera, go out and show how inaccessible and how dangerous those are. Because we got one in Baltimore I cross, and it works half the time. And the other half of the time, I'm Irish Catholic, so I just kind of do a quick Hail Mary and run as fast as I can. So, you know, that's kind of the reality we live in. So, but again, these are stories that we can easily tell and get the word out there to show how absurd that these things still exist that are dangerous to our community. You know, again, thank you to Denise and everybody for the invitation. I'll look forward to sharing more a little bit personal tonight as we all break bread this evening. But thanks again, and have a great rest of your day. And I look forward to passing it on now. Thank you.
Thanks, Denise. You got it? Did you want to go up to the front?
I'm going to be in the middle. I don't know really where he wants to go.
I want to thank him because I am one of those Dexcom users that now gets it audibly through my phone. For a continuous glucose monitor. I was one of those that they kept saying, you can't do it.
Could you ask any of my panel to come up, please? In case Michael, Donna, and...
So, we're going to have the employment panel. Cindy's going to moderate that. And so I could have David... or Michael Alvarez, Donna Smith, and Jeff Bishop come forward. And while they're doing that, could we have a door prize?
We got a microphone for you here.
Good morning. So remember that I said yesterday that you don't get to win a door prize if you're not having fun. So who's having fun? Okay, who wants some coffee? Okay, so what we're going to start out with is this lovely mug. And I want to give away this mug first because it was handed to me, and then I've been afraid that I would drop it like the clumsy person that I am. So I'm going to make this somebody else's. But and it is a mug from the Snohomish County Council of the Blind. And then, because you got to put something in it, There is a $10 Starbucks card and a Seattle Seahawks coffee sleeve for, like, it's not for that mug, but, like, if you get your Starbucks mug. And that comes from Lisa and Reggie George. And also, I just want to thank my partner in crime, Mika, for reminding me to put people's names back in that might have won yesterday. And so everybody now has a chance to win again today fresh. So, everybody's new best friend for some coffee is Connie Hollis. Are you in the room? Too much coffee.
She doesn't like coffee anyway. She wants hot chocolate.
That's okay, my mom. How about Chieko Tanita?
Okay, I can't find
her. Who?
All right.
Is Michael up here?
Michael's here.
Okay, great. Okay, good. Okay. All right, we're going to get started. Well, bittersweet, this is a panel that Sue Amater started probably about 17 years ago, and we thought it needed to continue, and so it's my honor to do that. And I reached out to a few people who said yes to being here. So before we get started, I just want to know, are the participants from our youth program in the room? And if you are, clap your hands. They're not. Okay. So they're not here yet. And they're supposed to be in here. So, No, they're coming in here to watch the employment panel. So hopefully they'll get in here. Maybe they're still trying to work on getting things together. And so our theme this weekend is paving the way. And so that's one fact. Another fact that I want to mention is that we know the unemployment rate amongst people who are blind is way too high. We always hear the number 70%. Whatever the number is, if it's not 70, we know it's still too darn high. It's way higher than what it is for the general population. And so the three people that we are going to hear from today are successfully employed, blind, and I'm sure they've paved the way in their own right to get where they are, and they're going to share that with us. Nothing ever worthwhile comes easy. Do you agree? And in fact, sometimes when we have the toughest moments, those are the teaching moments for us, and certainly, you know, the old adage, you learn from your mistakes, all of that stuff. But really, when the road is tough and you really have to work for something, when you get to where you're going, you appreciate it even a little more, don't you? So we have three wonderful panelists. I'm going to introduce each of them individually as they come up. But I want to thank Michael, Donna, and Jeff for being willing to be on this panel. Help me thank them. And if we do this right, we'll have time for questions at the end. So hold your questions until the end, and then you may ask an individual panelist or all three of them a question. Okay? Are there table mics on the tables?
There's a mic over here, yes.
Is there a table mic in front of you too, Denise, over there? No? Yeah. Okay. So Michael Alvarez, Michael, do you want to speak at the podium or do you want to sit at the table?
Because they can. The
okay. All right. Michael Alvarez is a Spanish interpreter, independent contractor for Telelanguage. Help me welcome Michael to the podium. Okay. I do have my grill program at the podium, so you need to set it aside. It's right in front of you. There's, you got it. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Where is the microphone?
Right here. Right?
Oh, okay. Here we go.
You can adjust.
Hello, yes. My name is Michael Alvarez. I work as an independent contractor interpreter with a company called Telelanguage. I should say right off, and this is something that a lot of people make the mistake about, is that there's a difference between interpreting and translating. Translating deals primarily with written material, whereas interpreting is based primarily on oral things, communications, and whatever. And what I do is interpreting, which is oral, and I do it with English to Spanish. I actually started, went through an interpreter training program at, specifically a medical interpreter training program at a local community college in Portland, Oregon. And, it was a fairly long, it was a 6-month program, including a practicum work that I had to do at a hospital. And I had to take a licensure exam, and I had some issues with getting accommodations, including a reader for the exam. But I was able to do it. At that time, it was all classroom-based. I understand now that they've gone to a web-based system, which is a nice thing. Hopefully it's accessible. I don't know the answer to that question, but I then, after I did that, I sent my resume off to a bunch of interpretation companies, and eventually I got a job in 2003 at a company called Network Omni, which is another interpreting company, but it was a call center situation, and I worked at that company for 3.5 years. And then I had some issues with them. They were implementing some technology that was not accessible, and so then I left, and then I found this other company, Telelanguage. And the nice thing about working with them is I work from home, so I can set my own schedule, and I work on the telephone, so I can do that. And in terms of accommodations, well, I had, when I took my licensure course, I had a dictionary of medical terminology in Spanish, which I had brailled. So I refer to that some. I also have a big 27-volume Spanish-English braille dictionary. It's unfortunate. It's done for the University of Chicago. Unfortunately, they no longer produce that. But that was my high school graduation present from my parents. It's one that I don't use it a lot because I know it pretty well. But if there's a word that I don't really know, I can look in there. In terms of what you have to do, I've referred earlier to this differentiation between Spanish, between interpreting and translating. In fact, it's a whole different skill, because you are if you're translating something, you are dealing, let's say if you have a letter that you want to write to somebody and then you have to translate it, you can read the letter or have it read to you or whatever you want, and then you can figure out how the words are translated with that. With interpreting, you have to, as they are speaking, figure out what they're saying and then interpret that back. Now, I should say here that even with interpreting, there's two different types. There's what they call consecutive interpreting and simultaneous interpreting. When you go to court and when you're looking at the United Nations, they use what they call simultaneous interpreting. What we use mostly is consecutive interpreting, because I do medical appointments, and sometimes I help people who are griping about their electric bills or their gas bills and stuff like that. So that the idea is that they say a few sentences or whatever, and then you translate it or interpret it back for them. And one of the reasons, this goes back a long way, but one of the reasons I really became interested in this was when I would watch TV And I would hear people speaking in Spanish on the TV, and I would try to translate that, interpret it in my mind, what they were saying, and see if they got it right or not. And one of the things that you, that anybody can do is that, you know, on your, a lot of your Blu-rays and DVDs, they have audio description. Well, on the same panel, they have the Spanish dub versions of a lot of them. And, you can see how they translate stuff. Sometimes it's quite hilarious, even if you don't understand it, because they're trying to speak over the voice of the English speakers, and sometimes they don't get it right. But anyway, you know, it's a job that requires a lot of skill. You know, to do that, because there are a lot of people who are bilingual in other languages, but who wouldn't be good as interpreters, because you have to almost also be bicultural too. Because then when they refer to things, for instance, in my medical work, we do a lot of times they ask you how tall you are or how much they weigh. Well, the person, a lot of them are more comfortable telling you how tall they are in centimeters, because in every other country of the world, they use the metric system. And so when I tell them, when I ask them how tall they are, and I oftentimes will say, you can tell me in meters if you want. And I can then do the translation and tell them how much that is roughly in feet. And I can do that mentally. Also, I learned to memorize patterns. For example, any Visa credit card in the world always starts with number 4. Or any MasterCard in the world starts with number 5. And those are patterns that I've memorized. And it helps me to do my job, because if I have to write down a credit card number, and I always braille it, to give, if the person is trying to pay with a credit card, I have to be able to write it down. And, so that helps me, makes it a little faster. And, speaking of that, we also, because we have to deal with confidential information, we have to be very careful about, you know, the types of information, because it's kind of, you know, we're dealing with private information, so we have to be careful about how we handle it. So, I hope that, my talk is very good. And now, I guess I'll pass it over to Cindy for the rest, next person on the panel.
Thank you. Nicely done. Okay. Very nice. Wow. You have to be listening and talking almost at the same time. My goodness. Okay. next, we are going to hear from Donna Smith. She is manager of accessible services at Sound Transit. And she's relatively new to the state of Washington. Help me welcome her.
I'll just set it on top of it. That's all right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. I've been in Washington for 5 months, so still have a lot to learn. All right, so as Cindy said, I am the manager of accessible services for Sound Transit. What that means is that I interface with all of the departments within Sound Transit with regard to access. So whether it's what kind of signs we put up, or how we build our stations going forward, or what our bus drivers do, I interface with all of those different areas around access. So if you want to jump up and down and yell about train crossings, come yell at me. Okay, that's my job. All right, so how did I get here? So it was definitely not a straightforward path that got me to where I am in employment today. Way back when, I decided I would get a degree in psychology. I didn't give it a whole lot of scientific thought at the time. I was just thinking I want to be in the helping profession, and so got a degree in psychology. And that led to some direct service work. So my first 5 years of employment out of college was managing group homes. I'll be honest, this was back in the dark ages, so we're talking 1979. I would not have gotten that job on my own. They hired me and my husband at the time as a team to manage group homes. And I don't think that that agency at that time of the world would have hired me as a blind woman to come in and manage those group homes on my own. As it turned out, it was something that I was really pretty good at, and that I was able to build some skill in that area, and it certainly helped me going forward with things that I wanted to do after that. So when I decided that I was ready to move past direct service work, I started thinking about, so what is it that I'm really good at? What is it that I want to do? How can I make those things go together? And so one of the things that I'm good at is communication, both verbal and written. But I needed to build some skill in the verbal communication area. When I was in college, I got a BA degree instead of a BS degree because to get a BS degree, you had to take public speaking. And I just wouldn't do it. So I wouldn't have graduated, I don't think. So I had to do some work in that area. And I started looking for opportunities to speak publicly. The Mississippi Council of the Blind gave me some great opportunity in that area. So I was able to take some lead roles within the organization itself so that I had to speak to the group. I started doing some advocacy work so that I could give our public statements to the state legislature, any of those types of things that got me in front of people delivering messages. I practiced on a lot of civic groups doing public awareness type presentations for their meetings. And I also went to a lot of schools and talked about guide dogs. I had gotten my first guide dog in 88, and so did some work with schools talking to kids of all ages about guide dogs. So then I thought, all right, this is all great fun, but what does this really mean for me professionally? And so I decided that training was something that I wanted to do at a professional level. And so I started listening to trainers. I started listening to people who present. I'd go to workshops like this and or things that were designed for workshops for my work at that time. And so I would take notes about the content, but I'd also take notes about the trainers. What did they do that I liked? What do I think worked really well? What would fit within my personality and my style? And then what did I not like? So what did they do that I wanted to make sure I never, ever did in front of a group, right? So I started kind of building that level of knowledge. And then I started making sure that I had deep knowledge in the area that I wanted to train in. So we've made it up to the 90s now. So I was focusing in on training about the ADA, all titles. I trained around Mississippi first. That's where I'm from. And then I did – all right, more Mississippi people. that was a shock. That was a shock. All right, and then I started doing it in the southeastern region. There's an 8-state when you look at the way the states are divided up for federal purposes. There's an 8-state southeastern region, so I started training in that area and then took it to the national level in 2002 when I went to work for Easter Seals Project Action. That is also when the focus became transportation. So prior to that, it was, you know, transportation was always a piece of it, and certainly it was always a piece of things for me personally. But professionally, it became a focus when I went to work for Easter Seals Project Action. I just worked up there from a training and technical assistance specialist to manager of training to director of the project in the end. I added during that time frame, in addition to specific knowledge about the ADA and transportation, I also added facilitation to my skills as a professional. So I went and took some courses from George Mason University about facilitation, because facilitation is very different from just leading a meeting or even conducting a training. It's a very different set of skills. Still requires you to be in front of a group of people and work with them, but it's a different set of skills. So I added that to my experience, and then when it looked like Easter Seals wasn't necessarily going to support Project Action in the way that would make it a continuing viable place for me to work, I started looking for other work. And so at that time, I had so much experience working with the ADA and access and transportation. It didn't seem to make sense to do anything except look for work in transportation. So that's when I looked for and found the job here with Sound Transit as manager of accessible services. And now I get to add a whole new scope of knowledge to my work base, because you would not believe the things that I actually did not know about how a public transportation agency works before I got here. So I'm adding a lot of knowledge there and enjoying that. I enjoy that kind of challenge. So what kind of accommodations do I have? You know, it's the usual suspects. I have a screen reading software, have a Braille note taker. But the real answer to this question is that I get what I need. And so if you, you know, prove your worth at work and you only ask for those things that you truly need in order to make your job work, to be able to do your job the best you can, and you're with the right employer, then you're going to get it. So that's kind of my approach to accommodations. Obstacles, we all know what the obstacle is. It's people who think we can't do what we know we can do, and aren't willing to give us the chance. And so we can't change those people necessarily. You kind of have to do it one by one. But you can certainly work with them and around them as you need to. And so my advice to anyone who's looking for work or thinking about changing up what they're doing is that you have to believe in yourself. So figure out first and foremost, what is it that you do well? And then really work to build your skill and knowledge in that area, and then believe that you can do it competitively. You don't have to do everything well, and you don't have to do it just like a sighted person would do it. But you do have to be good, and you have to be willing to work to get better. So then you can go to an interview, and you can be confident that you're able to compete. All job seekers, no matter what, have to compete, and we still have to do it a little bit harder. So I just say that, you know, you can do what you want to do. Just think about it. Build those skills. We all have different abilities. We all have different levels of knowledge. We have different levels of ambition. So don't let counselors or teachers or anyone who's supporting you shove you into an employment box that you don't want. So figure out what you want to do and then pursue that. You know, work is work. It's called that for a reason. We all have to do things that we don't necessarily want to do. We have to work through those jobs that we'd rather not have to do to get better, to move up to something else. So that's just part of the game. My best advice to you is to set targets for yourself and then believe that you can achieve those targets and go after it. So thank you.
I knew this was going to be good, and it is. All right. next, I'm pleased to invite to the microphone Jeff Bishop, Program Manager, Windows Accessibility Team, Microsoft. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yep.
I wonder if I can take this off the stand. No, it's fine. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
My name is Jeff Bishop, and I live in Kirkland, Washington. Moved here last July to go to work for Microsoft Corporation. Yeah, I would like to hold it, actually. Yeah, that'd be better. Great. My wife is here with me in Kirkland, as well as my son, and I have a son back in Tucson, Arizona. So I work on the Windows accessibility team, and we're building out features for all of you having to do with Narrator and other ease of access settings. And we're really trying to build a screen reader that meets and, you know, allows you to be more competitive in all things that you do. Now, I have a pretty lengthy career in IT and software development, about 31 years now. I started in 1987, working for a very small company doing documentation writing just out of college. I then went to work for another small software company in California doing programming for Disney Imagineering. Yeah, we wrote the software that tracked the rides that you would ride on and as they developed new rides. That was a really enjoyable experience. In fact, we got to go underground and actually go see the technology that was under there. That was quite an experience. In the 90s, I returned back to Tucson and I worked in software development and did software training. Now one could say, well, how does a blind person do that? Quite well. I had a very unique way of training people. Had a great team of people to work with me, but it was all about putting people in real world situations and teaching them the way that you would be taught on the job itself. I then became involved with Toastmasters International. Toastmasters is a public speaking organization. How many of you are involved in Toastmasters here? That's great. I would greatly encourage you, especially if you're interested in improving your public speaking. I served in leadership positions in that organization as an area governor and as a division governor. And then went to work for Microsoft Corporation in 1995. Now, August 24th of 1995, if I remember correctly, was the date that Windows 95 was released. And I started in December, and I was asked to support Microsoft Access for developers. Now, for those that don't know, Access, at least at that time, was a significant problem from a screen reading technology. Not only did we not really have Windows 95 screen readers at that point. JAWS for Windows 1.0 was just coming out. So they stuck me in Windows 3.1. And I had to really utilize tools and teams to really allow me to be successful. And I'll talk more about that in just a minute. A few years later, I went to work for the University of Arizona. Worked there for about 17 years, and about 10 years into that job, the most horrible thing happened. Technology changed. The university decided that they were going to move to a new student information system. The software development tools were all based in Java and were not accessible. So the fear of losing one's job was real. Now, obviously I had stayed there for 7 more years, and we worked it out. But there were some pretty scary times, and I'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes too, about advocacy and things like that. Then I came here to work for Microsoft Corporation and returned to work on building out features for those who were blind or visually impaired and really trying to make a difference for everyone here and around the world. Now, back in the 90s, there was a giant of a man. He's no longer with us, named Clarence Wiley. Any of you know him or knew him? Clarence Wiley worked for GW Micro at the time. And I remember sitting in a CSUN session with him, and there were, I don't know, 50 people in the room, and he started to give his presentation. And before he got into his presentation, he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, have you bought your copy of JAWS today?" And the whole room gasped. "What? What are you saying?" Back then, the competitive landscape was huge, very, very, very competitive. And everyone was like, "What do you mean? We're Windowize customers." And Clarence Wiley said, "If you do not have every tool in your tool belt to make you successful, then you won't be." That's real, isn't it? Yeah. So what does that mean? What does it mean to have every tool in your tool belt? What it means is that you as an individual need to make sure that you have everything that you need and even more to succeed and be a master at those things. Know your technology. Know multiple screen readers. I know all of us say, it's hard to learn one. Well, in some circumstances, one isn't enough. Right? Know know and use mentors. That's really important. And seek them out. No matter what your field is, and no matter if you've been in a job for 5 or 10 or 20 years, other people on your team are there to help and assist you. Don't be afraid to feel empowered to get what you need in your job. That's so important. Remember that your employer is part of your team, right? You're a team for them. They're a team for you. So don't hesitate to ask for what you need. It's really critical to do that. Now, it's not all about work. It's also about people, right? People. So we always hear about, when we hear about these employment panels and all that, we talk a lot about our work and what we do. It's also important to make sure you have a strong foundation around you of people. People at work, people at home, people in your inner circle. What does this really mean? When you go to work, work hard. When you go home, play hard. Right? That's really, really important. Balance is key. Don't let stress be too big of a factor for you. I work for Microsoft, and yeah, it's pretty stressful there. But, they even tell us, when you leave, your family is most important. So what I want to leave with you here today is, be a master of your tools. Make sure that you have a strong foundation of people around you, and really make goals to push your future forward. It's really, really important. I'll turn it over to Cindy.
Thank you, Jeff.
Here you go. Oh, here's the mic. Okay. You took it off the stand.
I got it. Okay. Put this back in here. Wow. So all I can say is the three of you did Sue proud. Thank you so much. So we have plenty of time for questions. Excited about that. And the three of them did a great job. If you have a question, do we have a couple of mic runners?
Yes.
Yeah. We do. If you have a question, raise your hand and somebody will get to you.
This is Viola Benson. Hi, Jeff and everybody. Mike, this is for you and Jeff, because I'm Mexican. I have a friend behind me who also is, so I know what it's like to have your English or American friends to say, what does this mean? Or can you tell me how to say this or that? And as you know, it's not literal. So they're expecting you to say it exactly as it is. And that is difficult, and I applaud you for doing it. How difficult was the training to actually do it? Did you have to go to school for a long period of time? And Jeff, what can I say? I'm a assistive technology trainer here, and I admire you and have for years. So glad you're here in Washington. That, I just had a comment for you because I had an opportunity. So,
okay. Michael, do you want to come to the microphone and answer her question? Do you have the microphone there? I don't know if we do. No? Okay. All right. He's coming over here to the microphone. Just go around me.
Ahead of you, but
sorry. Yeah, right. Keep coming. Here, I'm going to give you the mic.
Well, for that lady who asked me that question, it was about 6 months worth of training. But it was very interesting because a lot of the people in the class were native speakers. See, I was born in the United States, but my father was born in Cuba. His parents were born in Spain. And a lot of the people in the class, they were native speakers from various countries. There was Mexico, but there was a bunch of other countries. And it was always interesting because we would have arguments about how this person would say this, or about a person from this country would say this other way. And it was, and the classes were, in that respect, they were kind of fun because we would argue about how a certain thing would be said. And they, for the most part, they let us, you know, say whatever we have to. And even when I interpret now, I try to, if I realize that the person is from Spain, I like to interpret for them because that's where my grandparents were from, and I know exactly how people in Spain say certain things, you know.
Hi, this is Mika White. And first, Donna, welcome to Washington. And this is a question for the whole panel. And that is, in your job, what has been the most difficult tool that you have had to master that maybe you didn't realize beforehand?
Okay, who wants to take it first?
I'll do it first.
Okay.
Here you go, Michael.
Well, probably the most difficult tool, and I don't know if you call it a tool, but was the issue of trying to get, because we have to deal with a lot of information, so to learn how to write down credit card numbers or automobile VIN numbers, those are really tough because it's letters and numbers together. And you had to learn how to do that, and you couldn't have them repeat, you know, you have to have them repeat all these numbers, you know, and to learn that when, for example, when a person says V, they could be letter B or letter V, because in English, the letter B as in Bravo and the letter V as in Victor are very distinctive. In Spanish, they're not. And or the same thing with the letters C and S, because in Spain they list their C's, but in Mexico they don't. So that kind of memorization of those patterns, that was kind of hard, at least at first. I mean, it still is kind of hard, I'd say.
Okay. Anybody else?
Sure. So this is Donna. You know, the tool that's difficult changes from time to time, because as technology changes and as, you know, the older I get, the less I seem to be able to absorb. so it's whatever the new challenge is. But I think the most persistent thing for me has been dealing with PDF files. That's been the bane of my professional existence, because people like to use them for a number of reasons. One, because you can get them all nice and protected and people can't change them. You can also scan something and have an image file that then is saved as a PDF. All of those things make it very difficult for me to sometimes seek out the information that I need. So I do a combination of, you know, using that great OCR type software to make the best sense of it that I can. I use readers when I need to, and then also doing a lot of education about, so how do you make those PDFs accessible and easier to use.
I think the key thing here is being very adaptable. Throughout my 31-year career, I was thinking about this, and there were countless times where I've had to really think outside the box in trying to come up with strategies to allow me to continue to be successful with whatever's thrown at me, whether it be a documentation issue, a new development tool, or even a learning management system tool, or whatever the case may be. There were always these things, and what it always came down to for me was making sure that I knew all of the AT technology that I had at my disposal well. And so for me, sometimes I would use a Mac, sometimes I would use NVDA, sometimes I would use Windowize or JAWS or even Narrator, right? It would just depend on the tool, because not every screen reader will solve every problem. And so that's really the key thing. When I worked at Microsoft in 1995, we had to develop interfaces that would allow me to support access in a way that screen readers wouldn't allow. Things like drawing lines and creating relationships and databases and things like that. That was not possible back in the day. So we had to come up with actual development tools to be able to assist in that process. And this is where team is very important. Maybe you will not have the answer, but at least you have a team of people around you either at work or throughout our community, because that's also very important, to make sure that you reach out and use those resources too. So it's who you know that truly is important too, but also being very adaptable and being able to not be afraid of change, because change is going to happen, and sometimes you just don't know when that will be.
A question for you.
This is Annie Hartzell, and I just want to thank WCB. This is my first convention for a very long time, and I have come away so far with so much great information, so it's been really worth it for me. Mike, this is for you. I thought about becoming an interpreter, translator way back when I was deciding what I was going to do in life. So I'm very excited to hear that there's someone doing that. I am curious, are you doing strictly medical interpretation, or are you open to doing education and legal interpretation as well? I'm a special education professional by profession, or at least that was my previous job, and I can tell you that the interpretation there is not always accurate, particularly in IEP meetings where we have Hispanic students and with vision impairments, just because the information is so complex that we're trying to impart. So I'm just curious if you're expanding or if you have gone in those directions.
Where's the microphone?
It's right
here. Sorry. Oh, there we go. Well, actually, I can answer your question. I have interpreted for IEP meetings. What it is my company has contracts with different entities, including a whole bunch of school districts. I have interpreted for a few IEP meetings. I haven't done very many, but I have done some. And I actually have had at least one instance when I got to interpret for a man who was an orientation and mobility instructor. He was trying, all it was he was trying to set up an arrangement. He wanted to do a night lesson for his low vision student. And it was very nice. I mean, I was kind of excited because I knew what he said, you know, I'm an orientation and mobility teacher. And I said, oh, I'm blind. I use that myself too. And he I think was a little bit relieved that I knew what I needed to say, you know. But the issue of, occasionally it's come up. For example, I had, one of our clients is the New York Department of Welfare, I guess it is, and it's a place where the people can go if they want to get excused from the requirement that they have to look for work while they're on welfare. And this lady was asking for an excuse because she had glaucoma, and it had already affected her vision to a considerable degree. And when we found that out, it turned. I told them that I was blind as well. And she was like so happy. And so was the person from this agency was so happy to find that out, because she knew that I knew, like, for example, they were asking her, do you use, the way they asked it, do you use a stick to get around? And I interpreted it back as, does anybody recommend or has told you that you should use a white cane? Because in Spanish they have a word for the white cane. And she said no. She said that had not been recommended yet. I think so. Occasionally my blindness has played a role. I know about that. And in terms of interpreting for IEPs, I don't know if the school district where it has a contract with There's a couple other companies. I work for TeleLanguage, but there's a couple other companies out there. They should, you know, because they call on the phone and they do it from their home. That's how I did mine. So there.
This question's for Jeff. Jeff, this is Leslie. I'm the teacher of students with visual impairments. And I'd like you to, if I or someone else had a student who's considering a career in perhaps, often it is video game design. that's Janet's laughter. Would you recommend a place to start maybe exploring would be a platform like Quorum, or I know often you, just looking at the University of Washington, all of their classes are in Java or C++ or Python. But as a way to get their feet wet to then go on and learn other languages, is that something you would
consider? Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
You know, the gaming industry is amazingly rich and competitive, and there's a lot to gaming. You know, a lot of people focus on the video, but there's also sound, and so there's. It just depends on what aspect he wishes to he or she wishes to embark upon. I think in general, the guidance I would give would be for any circumstance where you want to get into the IT field or programming or anything of that nature. I think a strong background in math is really important. A strong background in logic, in development, even you know, using Python, for example. Some blind programmers in our field, for example, the developers of NVDA program in Python. And look where NVDA is today. As well as JAWS. I mean, Glenn Gordon is a perfect example of someone who, frankly, JAWS wouldn't be what it is today if it wasn't for Glenn Gordon and others. So there are challenges with some software development tools, but, you know, C++ and Python are definitely things that can be done. Visual Studio is really a lot more accessible than it was when I was using Visual Studio back in the 90s, for sure. So I think the future is really bright in this space, and he's coming into this opportunity at a really good time. And like I mentioned earlier, mentoring is also key. I would really think about maybe talking to people within the industry, you know, even at Microsoft, for example, there are teams there that he could reach out to, and perhaps we could, you know, help him get connected to them, to talk about, you know, what does it take to be a participant in the gaming industry? You know, what skills do you specifically have to be able to meet this goal? Whether you're a program manager or a software developer, or whatever the case may be, it would be great for him or her to reach out.
We probably have time for maybe two more questions, if that.
I have a mic, Cindy.
Yep.
This is Holly Kazmarski. I work with adults in blind rehabilitation, assistive technology, and travel training. I worked with Donna and her guide dog, Farlo, when she was with Easter Seals, and found her to be an awesome trainer. I have two questions. What do you miss most about leaving Easter Seals or your challenge that you had there? And what do you enjoy most with your new position at Pierce County Transit?
Sound Transit.
There is quite a difference.
We work with Pierce Transit too. So
that's
okay.
What I thought you did. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So what do I miss about Easter Seals Project Action? I miss the people. We had a great team in Project Action. When I started out there, we had, I think, about 15 of us on staff. And it built up to close to 20 at some point. When I left, there were like 3. So, you know, you could see the direction of the project, right? But I left some really fabulous people in those jobs, people I'm still friends with today, and I still do, when Sound Transit permits and allows, I still do some training with them. So we're about to do the paratransit eligibility course here. It's going to be hosted by Sound Transit, and so I used to train that when I worked at Project Action, and I'll be training with my colleagues from Project Action again on that. So I'm glad to do that. I am really excited about the opportunity to learn so much more about public transit. It's one thing to understand what's needed for access and what the ADA requires and what 508 requires and what that means in a person's life. It's another thing to take that level of information and then say, so how do you make it fit from within this agency that is just going dusk to dawn, nonstop with operational issues with these major construction projects? How do you fit it within that? I chose Sound Transit because they are a progressive agency, and because I knew that when I came to Sound Transit, I would not have to spend my time thinking up really clever ways to get them to comply with the ADA. You know, they do that already. And what they're interested in is, so what is the next level? You know, the ADA doesn't touch things like dynamic signage, or not much. And so they want to know, we're going to move into a more rigorous dynamic signage era, and so what can we do to make that accessible? Not what are they going to make us do, but what can we do to make this accessible? And that's what I love about my job, and I'm enjoying it quite a lot. Thanks for the questions.
I have a quick question. So all three of you, if you could answer this one. Do you have any vision at all? So are you totally blind? Do you consider yourself low vision? And is it onset by as adults or since birth? Just curious. I never asked that question of you guys earlier. So whoever wants to go first.
Well, I can answer it very easily. I am totally blind. I do not see light and have been so from birth.
Okay, that was Michael. Next.
So this is Donna. I'm also totally blind, and that's been the case since I was 3.
Okay.
Let me answer her question, then we'll get you, yeah. Cindy. I am totally blind as well. I was born 3.5 months premature, and I used to be able to see light, but that has now since gone as well.
Thank you.
This is Reg with Services for the Blind in Yakima, Technology Specialist for Jeff. I just wanted to ask quickly about the Bright Futures and Narrator. Thanks for implementing some Braille support. It was when it started, you could, if you implemented it for Narrator, it would cut off other screen readers. And I just wonder where it's going, and wanted to thank you guys for making it a competitive alternative and a free way for people to have good speech.
What I'd like to do here is, because we don't have a lot of time, if you would like to speak to me about that, come and see me at the break. I'm near the front on the in the center, I think, right?
Yeah. She's in the front too. We're going to be breaking for a second. So if you really want to, are all three of you willing to stay up here for a couple of minutes? Okay, they're all up near the podium. So during your break, you can come say hi. Let's do one door prize. Thank you guys. Help me thank our panel. You guys did great. Thank you so much. If you don't mind giving a few minutes, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, was that not a great panel or what? All right. This door prize, we're going to give away this 3 DVD set of season 13 of Criminal Minds. I don't know who this came from, so if it's yours, I'm sorry. I hope I don't draw your name. You'll be like, I tried to give this away. And then also we're going to give away $10 plus a raffle ticket for the 50-50 raffle that GDUWS is putting on. And I believe that they are giving away an Echo Dot. And the winner of that is going to be Ursula McCulley. Are you in the room?
We're going to be on break until 10:30. Be back on time. And going to be an interesting panel at 10:30. Don't miss it.